This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
You know what, though? I learned a lot about her. And you are, too, now that you've got it.
Yeah, I got the book.
And I hope our guest doesn't get mad that I'm passing on his book. Should have made you buy it. You just send him a check. Seth Wickersham, he's the author of It's Better to Be Feared. It's an excellent dive into the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady Patriots. He's joining us now to say Tom a hotline. Seth, happy holidays.
Hey, happy holidays to you, too.
Buddy,
hey, glad. No, I'm not upset at all. You can pass it along. It's okay. Like,
well,
no, it's totally okay with me. It happens.
You're good with that, Seth? We don't want to cheat you out of any money, buddy.
No one's cheating me. It's okay. Thank you, though.
Well, Seth, first of all, I enjoyed the book very much. And my one question, look, my background is print. I was a columnist for 20 years, a reporter for a number of years. I'm wondering this. How difficult is it? And I asked this question of Jeff Perlman years ago. How difficult is it to make that transition from being a journalist to being an author?
You mean like doing something on a daily basis or even like, you know, you can do something
big picture project that consumes your life? How hard is it?
It's a great question. I mean, I think that like the biggest difference is I think the principles are kind of the same where it's like, you know, you need to do it well, you just need to do it and get reps. I think with the book, you know, the key thing is just writing every single day, even if it means rewriting, you know, your slot from a day earlier and making it better. I think that like, and you know, I do think that when you write a book, clearly you have to have a point of view in it. But once you establish the point of view, you know, I think that while you don't want to take the reader's, you know, attention span for granted, you know, a little bit of point of view ends up carrying quite a bit. Whereas when you're doing kind of a daily story, I think that, you know, it's a little bit more essential to have sort of like news on a daily basis or whatever it might be that's driving it. So, you know, I mean, I guess we all get through it one way or the other, those of us who try to do books, and hopefully at the end of the day it turns out okay.
Well, it turned out more than okay. I mean, I read it pretty quickly considering I'm not really that smart. So you also wrote to my level. I appreciated that
very much. I'm not that smart either. So I'm like, it probably worked okay then.
Don't sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch. We're joined by Seth Wickersham, author of It's Better to Be Feared. Where do you begin when you're writing this book? At what point do you sit down and you start organizing your notes and say, okay, this is the first thing I have to do, this is the second thing I have to do, or did you just let it flow chronologically as it reads?
You know, I think that the hardest thing when I was writing this is like, you know, not only the time span, right? Because it's essentially a 20-year run with some material in it that predates the 20-year run, you know, Tom Brady's childhood, Bill Belichick's career before the Patriots. And you're also writing about famous people, which is good in a sense that, you know, it's not like you have to introduce them, but you know, the public has some sort of knowledge about who they are. And I think the question is like, how far do you go down on certain things? And so, you know, there's been a lot of books written about Bill Belichick or written about the Patriots that zeroed in on certain aspects of their lives or whatever it is. And I think at the end of the day, I just follow the thing that interested me most, whether it was, you know, Tom Brady's, you know, the night at Michigan where he thought he was going to transfer. He goes to see his counselor and his counselor says, you know, Brady was really down and he was thinking about transferring to Cal from Michigan, and his counselor, you know, rather than responding with any sort of, you know, kindness or a hug, you know, starts laughing at him. And he says, you know, you want to leave, go ahead. You haven't done bleep here anyway, and no one's going to care if you leave. And it really kind of, you know, reignited Brady's internal competitiveness and ambition. And, you know, that was one of those nights that if he had chosen something differently, I don't think we're talking about Tom Brady the way we're talking about him now. And so, you know, whether it's moments like that or moments in games where Belichick really outfoxed the other coach and trying to take readers inside how he did it, you know, those were the things that interested me. So I kind of just found a way to write to those.
How many people did you interview?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I interviewed, in a weird way, so I was hired at ESPN Magazine in 2000, And one of my very first stories for ESPN Magazine was in 2001, and it was on Tom Brady. And at the time, nobody even knew if he was going to finish the season as a starter. And, you know, the Patriots' run of greatness, you know, evolved over my entire professional career. And so in a weird way, it's like they were always the thing that I was writing about, or at least most of the time when I was writing about the NFL. Like every time I'm writing about Peyton Manning, you're kind of writing about the Patriots, because even though he's great, his greatness is judged only within the context of their dominance. And so I interviewed hundreds of people and used all that material gained over years. And then specifically for the book, I mean, it was over 100. I didn't count exactly who it was. But so when you combine it all, these things are like kind of, it's hundreds of people over the course of 20 years, really.
That's incredible, Seth, because, you know, this organization, as much as any other, is such a, I don't even know the appropriate word. I mean, they control the messaging to the nth degree, and still getting access to 100 people, more than 100 people, I find to be incredible. Other than some of the obvious candidates, was there anybody out there that maybe eluded you, that you really wanted to speak with, you didn't get an opportunity?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that not really. You know, even though Bill Belichick and Tom Brady didn't cooperate, they didn't stop anyone from talking to me. There was not a single person who said, "Hey, I'd love to talk to you for this, but Bill won't let me." And so I feel like that, you know, again, based on, like, you know, the 20 years of work that I had and having some insights into what had happened and having a lot of new material that had just never seen the light of day, and, you know, being able to get an audience with people as I was writing this project, I felt like I, you know, at the end of the day, had produced something that I think was well-rounded.
We're joined by Seth Wickersham, author. You should follow him on Twitter, at Seth Wickersham. And Seth, I read the book, and I enjoyed all of the individual stories and how this whole thing evolved from really nothing until Belichick came aboard to arguably the greatest dynasty we've seen in the NFL, if not all of sports. My biggest takeaway was this. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, just two totally different guys, but two very similar guys. And I actually saw a quote from you that kind of reinforced what I was thinking. It was that Tom Brady, when he is preparing for an opponent, he's looking for ways to win, but Belichick looks for ways not to lose. Would you say that's a correct assessment?
Well, I think that they're both just genius at working within, you know, both the confines of what they have and also seeing kind of limitless possibilities. I mean, the book, yes, it has like arguments and swear words and fights and scandal. And, you know, it has a lot of that because that happened during the Patriots run. But really, the book is about greatness and how greatness is achieved in this sport where greatness is inherently fleeting. It's hard to sustain it. And what the costs of that greatness were. And I think that, you know, when you look at Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, you're right. I mean, they're very different personalities. But when it comes to this game, they both are much more similar than they are not. And, you know, they came into each other at a very fragile moment in their lives. When Brady was drafted by New England, even though nobody knew what the Patriots had, you know, Belichick had seen his entire, you know, professional and kind of personal life in a way blown up when the Browns fired him. He had to wait 5 years for another chance. He goes 5-11 his first year in New England. People are thinking that if they lose again, he's probably going to be out. And then you had Brady, who almost went undrafted. And these guys were similar in the regard that the game meant so much to them that without that in their lives, it would be this kind of hole that, you know, that I think would be impossible to fill. And none of them wanted to consider what life would look like without football in it. And so they understood the stakes. And I think that's why you see them continuing to do this, even, you know, their legacies and their fortune is well intact, but they still haven't walked away. I mean, these guys many times have had the chance to walk away, like Tony Dungy, like John Elway, you know, on top, but none of them do. And I think that it's not because the Super Bowls matter less. I mean, that's what they do this for. But I think that there's something you know, deeply personal about the game to them, that they know that it's so essential to their happiness. They really don't want to look at life without it.
You know, I've wondered this. I remember Belichick in Cleveland, and he was good but not great. Nobody had any idea that this was coming. No one could have foretold this.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, Seth, through all your reporting and all the work you've done, you're more familiar with the Belichick way, the Patriot way, than anybody outside of the organization. What would have happened in an alternate reality of Bill Belichick staying with the New York Jets, not resigning after a day on a napkin and all that? Could that have worked in New York?
It's really interesting to think about. So here's one for you. So when Peyton Manning was a junior, remember, he was thinking about coming out of, you know, college, and he did a bunch of, you know, scouting and talking to people about, you know, whether he should do that. And remember that, you know, the first pick of the draft that year? The New York Jets. And even though Belichick had just got there, think about what would have happened maybe if Peyton Manning had decided to come out as a junior to Bill Parcells' New York Jets with Belichick waiting in the wing. Now, that is a fascinating scenario to think about. You know, as it was, I mean, I think that Belichick decided that he was simply not going to coach with the Jets, and he'd rather sit out a year and run his contract out than coach, you know, under those circumstances with no owner, under Bill Parcells. Obviously, they had, you know, a complicated relationship, and that's how seriously he took it. I mean, I think that he didn't know what direction his career was going to go in when he resigned as the head coach of the New York Jets a day after getting the job, but he knew that this was not right for him. And, you know, we see it now in the NFL where it's like, you know, these guys get the job, they don't do as well, and then they're gone. And, you know, maybe some of them never get a crack at being a head coach again. Bill knew after the way Cleveland ended that his next opportunity was going to be his last best chance to be a good head coach in the NFL. And I think he wanted to win or lose on his terms. And, you know, whether that could have happened in New York, I think it's probably doubtful. You never know. But, you know, clearly getting handed the keys to all football operations in New England and having an owner in Robert Kraft that he knew and, you know, got along with, and they felt like they kind of understood each other. You know, it was just a better opportunity for him. All that said, they go 5-11 the first year.
How much of his legacy, and make no mistake about it, he's the greatest coach of all time in the NFL, but how much of that great legacy is tarnished by Spygate, by Deflategate, by all the other things that have popped up here and there?
Well, I think that I don't know how tarnished it is. I mean, clearly, you know, both Brady and Belichick are going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. I do think that, to me, it shows both what their scandals show was just how, you know, fragile they viewed winning in the NFL. And no matter how much they won and how successful they were, there's always a little bit of doubt kind of worrying in them where, you know, they still don't know how the next game's going to go. And, you know, you saw Bill Belichick, you know, taping signals long after the Patriots had won 3 Super Bowls. And, you know, whether it mattered or not in games is something that maybe 3 people know, Belichick, Ernie Adams, and Tom Brady, and I don't see any of them ever spilling the beans on that one. But it's safe to say that, like, look, if it did provide an advantage, it was probably limited. But still, they were doing it for a reason. They were taping for a reason, despite being warned by the league 3 times to stop doing it. So clearly it mattered on some level. Deflating footballs, I mean, clearly Tom Brady's been a great quarterback no matter what kind of football he's throwing. But during that 2014 season, I mean, he blew up at the equipment guys when the balls were overinflated and not to his liking. And, you know, he's petitioned the league to let quarterbacks from each team, you know, develop and break in their own footballs. And so clearly the basic grip of a football is something that has meant a lot to him, not irrationally, but it just has. And to me, it just shows these scandals, you know, while they kind of ballooned into these huge controversies, really at the heart is the insecurity about how the game is going to go and not knowing, you know, on Sundays who will win or lose. And again, having winning tied so much to their happiness and self-identity.
Seth, just a couple more questions. And I guess one of the bigger questions on a lot of people's minds is, we view Bill Parcells as this virtuoso with regards to X's and O's and this master of being able to identify talent. Let's, again, play a what-if game. Let's live in a world where Drew Bledsoe doesn't get blown up, doesn't get injured, doesn't ultimately be driven out of the Patriots. What happens to Tom Brady?
Well, I think you mean Bill Belichick, right?
Bill Belichick, Parcells. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So,
Freudian slip.
Belichick was having doubts about Drew Bledsoe, you know, before Bledsoe got hurt. And in that game, you know, they didn't play well on offense. I think they scored 3 points that game. You know, the Patriots go for it on fourth and goal. We obviously see, you know, how often teams go for it on fourth down now, and coaches, it's a huge thing nowadays. Patriots go for it on fourth and goal in that game, and Bledsoe takes a delay of game. I mean, just the worst penalty you can possibly have. I think that if Bledsoe had continued playing poorly, I think it's not inconceivable at all that Belichick would have benched him for Tom Brady. But what does that mean? Does Brady perform as well with Bledsoe healthy and looking over his shoulder the entire time? Remember, when Brady took over as the starter, Bledsoe was hurt for half the year. So he wasn't looking over his shoulder. He knew he was going to play each week, as long as he wasn't so bad that they obviously had to put in the backup. And so, you know, I don't know how things would have worked out, but I do think that Belichick, you know, had reservations about Bledsoe, about whether he was actually a great quarterback or whether he just kind of looked like one a couple times a game on certain throws. And, you know, I think that things would have come to a head because obviously Bledsoe had just signed a $100 million deal that previous offseason. But I do think that Belichick had realized that maybe Bledsoe can't take us as far as he might have been able to back in 1996, for instance.
And my last question, Seth, you know better than anybody outside of their own homes, how much longer does Bill Belichick, Tom Brady keep working at their jobs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, if I knew, I think that Brady will end up leaving mostly because of the, you know, he needs to dedicate more time to his family and because just the training and the preparation that it takes, what it takes for him to be Tom Brady is so time consuming that I think he'll eventually have to just say, look, I had my career. It was unprecedented. I need to spend more time, you know, being a dad and being a husband and being present because there really is no off switch for him. Belichick is different. You know, he always said, I'm not going to be Marv Levy and coaching in my 70s. I mean, he loves to take shots at Marv Levy. But, you know, he's 69 years old. He's going to be 70 in April. And I don't see him walking away anytime soon. All that said, only Belichick knows when he's planning to walk away. He's always said he wanted to, you know, he's always said privately he wanted to have his son set up in their coaching career and also their football career and then also have the team in good shape so that whenever he handed the team to a successor, they're getting a good team. There's way too much pride to hand over like a bad team and have the winning end. And I think that, you know, look, he's setting up a pretty good team right there. I mean, you know, they've got a quarterback who's got a lot of potential. And, you know, just spitballing, but if he were to walk away after this season, you know, he'd hand over to his successor a good team, set up at quarterback. And, you know, Belichick would always have a legacy of having made the decisions that were best for the team.
He's the author of It's Better to Be Feared, The New England Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit for Greatness. You can get it at Amazon, Books a Million, just about anywhere you can get a book except mine. Mine's given away to my producer. You can follow him on Twitter at Seth Wickersham. Seth, again, outstanding book, buddy, and really appreciate you coming on today. Have a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Seth Wickersham joining us on the Saitama Hotline.